This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gene Hackman dead at the age of 95. Folks are texting us their favorite films he was in. Hoosiers, Poseidon Adventure, French Connection. Someone else says, I had the opportunity to meet Gene Hackman during Mardi Gras about 30 years ago. He was really down to earth and a nice guy. Yeah, he was here for filming the movie Runaway Jury a few years back. I think that was back in like 03. So there's that. Other text coming in. Someone says, my favorite Gene Hackman movie was him as a supporting actor, but in Enemy of the State with Will Smith. Someone else says Mississippi Burning. Another vote for Hoosiers and Young Frankenstein. Keep the text coming here on WWL. I'm Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. The founder of the Mardi Gras Guide, Arthur Hardy, joins us now. As Arthur, here we are on the Thursday before Fat Tuesday. How you doing?
Oh, I'm ready. What a nice triple header uptown tonight, huh?
Yeah, I got to ask you, though. I went out to Druids and Ala last night, and there were wide swaths on Magazine Street, on St. Charles, even on either side of Gallier Hall, where there were either no people or just a few people here and there. There were some pockets of big crowds, but there were a lot of places where there weren't a whole lot of people out there.
I'm surprised at that. I really am, with the weather. And all the pent-up demand for Mardi Gras after, you know, it's been a long time, right? This is a late Mardi Gras, so I'm surprised to hear that. Maybe it'll ramp up tonight. I mean, I don't know what more you could need than the parades we've got going on right now, and including last night. And I understand the parades were kind of late in getting to Gallier Hall. Have you heard any?
Yeah, I think the start time was supposed to be 6:15, and right. I didn't see a lot of movement on Jefferson until like 7:15. So maybe that had something to do with it.
Yeah,
and you know, a lot of people had to work today. A lot of kids go to school today, so maybe that was part of the problem.
Well, I know the people in Muses want Friday to be a holiday because that parade is wonderful. And, you know, the theme is secret, but if you bought a morning newspaper, there's the carnival bulletin in it that tells us the theme is Return of Super Muse. And that's a throwback to right after Katrina, their first parade afterwards. The Super Muse comes to town and solves all of our problems. Well, apparently she's come back right now.
Ah, so like the superhero way. Super Muse will ride
there
through the city tonight.
Well, she is back.
I mean,
and that's the third parade, yeah.
I know that you have, you know, a role to play with your guide and everything else, but, I mean, we know all parades are not created equal, and maybe, I don't know, maybe Druids and Allah just don't have the same kind of, you know, they don't throw bedazzled shoes, and they don't have, how many women are in Muses now?
I think about 1,100, yeah. The bigger budget you have, obviously, the more you can do. But that's what's neat about every season is there's variety. You've got some really good small parades. You've got some super cruising. So, you know, you can find something that you'll enjoy. And tonight's an example of that. You know, you start off with Babylon. They've got a saying that carnival begins when Babylon rolls. They had the first parade of a triple header, and then Chaos, which uses the old Momus floats and expects some really hard-hitting satire on these floats. And they throw out like a deck of playing cards that is a picture of each float. And on the back, it explains it to you if you need any explanation. And then, of course, muses with the shoe. I mean, you know, again, there's something for everybody. And I just hope they can roll on time, because it's no fun to be parading at 1 o'clock in the morning. You know?
No, and typically that's what we see with muses. We frequently see that they don't get off that route till well after midnight. If there's anything that delays the start or a breakdown or any delay during the parade, yeah, it's often midnight, 1 o'clock before the muses parade finishes downtown in the warehouse.
Yeah, and I don't know what the answer to that is, but come on out tonight. I mean, this weather can't get much better.
And we have a bonus parade in Metairie tonight as well, huh?
Yep, a doubleheader. And, you know, whenever there are two parades, you can just figure there's going to be more people coming out there. So Symphony's going to roll, and that's a nice little parade, and followed by Atlas, which has been bumped all over the place. They moved off for Super Bowl Sunday last year, and then they plan to return to their traditional first Sunday. Then we had rain, so they'll be parading tonight. And two for the price of one. I've been hearing that crowds have been particularly soft in Metairie for the first weekend, so hopefully it'll pick up tonight.
Yeah, well, if you go to Symphony, you can catch some of those chocolate Symphony bars.
Yeah, isn't that a neat throw, huh? Something you can eat. I like that.
We're talking with Mardi Gras Guide founder Arthur Hardy. What do you like to eat on the parade route? Is it moon pies? Is it chiwis? Is it chocolate bars? Is there something that comes off the float and you're like, yes, I was hungry, I'm glad I caught it?
No, for me, it's hot dog and chili. But speaking of eating...
Well, don't throw those off the floats, please.
Oh, no. The Salvation Army has ramped up their presence at Mardi Gras. They've always been there to help first aid-wise, but now they're here to help the first responders by feeding them. They've got a lot of food and things to hand out, and Yubik pies, and just some refreshments for all the first responders. And last night, I learned also for the media, so I ate two... pulled pork sandwiches off the Salvation Army truck. Am I bad or what?
Ah, all right. First responders and media. Maybe I'll be stopping by a Salvation Army's tent along the parade route.
Good food.
Good pulled pork.
You'll enjoy yourself, I promise.
We'll be back after this check on traffic with Arthur Hardy, the founder of the Mardi Gras Guide. One person texts us on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talking Text line and says, this was Allah's first year on Wednesday. Maybe, Arthur Hardy, that was a factor last night. Somebody else texted and said, we needed a day of rest before muses, so we took it last night. So maybe that explains a couple of explanations for why there were pretty sparse crowds last night on the Uptown Parade Route.
Yeah, maybe so. But, you know, the reason Allah moved into the spot is so they wouldn't be parading past midnight. So I'm not sure of how it wound up. We'll find out. You know, I try to call. You know, I've got trusted soldiers along all the parades that give me reports, but they're all asleep.
So, yeah, well, someone texted us that one of Allah's floats broke down and that delayed things about 10 minutes. They had to switch out the tractor, but
We'll find out, but not this early. I'm the only one up.
Yeah, everybody else was at the parade still midnight. So they're still flipping and flopping. Big weekend ahead. I mean, we got tonight with, you already talked about Babylon, Chaos, Muses, Symphony, and Atlas. Tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday. I mean, we got parades uptown. We got parades in Slidell. Yeah. We got parades in Kenner. Yeah. We got parades everywhere on the West Bank.
We do. Slidell tomorrow night, doubleheader because of Dionysius being rained out last weekend. So that's Celine and Dionysius. And then tripleheader uptown, Hermes, Detente, Morpheus. Again, something for everybody, a lot of variety. And if the weather holds up, hopefully the crowds will pick up, huh?
Yeah, well, the weather's supposed to be perfect. I mean, we have a little shower tonight, and then Monday there's some rain coming at some point. We'll wait to hear about that. But the weekend looks picture perfect. In terms of, you talked about Metairie, and there's been some reports about very small crowds out there. We'll see what the doubleheader gets tonight. But they don't have any parades Friday or Saturday in Metairie now.
No, there's a lot of potential there for new crews that want to parade. You know, everybody seems to want to parade in New Orleans. But there are no openings, and when we don't see the likelihood that somebody would have to drop out for somebody new to come in. But in Metairie, there are several nights when you could put a parade, and I think the parish would welcome that. So maybe we'll see something new next year. You always hear about, it's a hard thing to do to start a parade. It really is. And a lot of people want to until they find out how much money's involved and how much work's involved. And all these people are volunteers, Dave. You know, they're not getting paid to do these things. And I often wonder, what if all the captains said, I had enough. I don't feel like doing this anymore. Is there somebody standing in the wings who says, hey, I'll take that thankless, payless job?
Yeah, and the vast majority of people in these parades pay to ride, pay for their flows, pay their dues, pay for everything. Yes. They're paying a lot of money for this experience. They're not getting paid. So,
they're not. So it's a wonderful thing we do, and it's one of the hardest questions I get asked when I do speeches around town or out of town or to conventions. Why do you guys do this? As a business model, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I guess the answer is we enjoy having fun and spreading joy to others.
If you know people who ride, if you know people who march in parades, who ride on floats, it is their life. It's their identity. It's their community. Yep. That's their friends and family. Yep. It's their coming together, and it's their way of really enjoying life. But it ain't cheap for anybody in a dance crew, a marching unit, or riding on a float. I get why, though. Saturday night, why in Metairie? Typically, when they had parades over the years, well, the crowds were very small because everyone was at Endymion,
and
Sunday,
it's a hard,
hard
thing to go
Bacchus.
Against.
So the crew of ISIS, though, is still parading, just not in Metairie anymore. They'll be in Kenner on Saturday.
They're in Kenner, and that's a nice little parade. And they, have a whole, initiative about breast cancer awareness. So they throw decorated bras. How's that for a throw?
All right, then Monday we get Orpheus Uptown with Proteus, and then Metairie has two parades on Monday, and then, of course, Fat Tuesday, parading Uptown, Metairie, and in Covington, so a whole lot more parading to come. If someone has not gotten a Mardi Gras guide yet, can they still grab one?
Yeah, they're still out there. We haven't sold them all, and hopefully we will, but we've had a good year with it, and I'm enjoying my association with the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com, and that's been a good move for me. It's expanded outreach a bit, and they've treated me well, and I'm still, running the magazine in terms of the content. I'm just not doing the heavy lifting, the ad sales, distribution, printing. They're doing that now, and it's been a relief after 49 years.
I'm hoping you got let's get the 50th. I'm looking forward to the 50th next year.
Yeah, I'm under contract. One more year.
All right. Well, you better get to work because it better be bigger and better than ever for your 50th.
I'm planning. You know it will.
Arthur Artie, founder of the Mardi Gras Guide here on WWL. We'll hear his reports throughout the day here on the radio. I'm Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. When we come back after this, what's going on with the White House correspondence? And should the president get to handpick the journalists that cover him? 7:46, Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. For decades, the White House Correspondents Association, an independent group of journalists, has picked which correspondents from which networks, publications, online sources, and others get the coveted spots of covering the President of the United States and the White House. The Trump administration now wants to eliminate that system and handpick who gets to cover the president. I figured we should get the perspective from someone who has been in the White House correspondent pool, who has covered a president or two of the United States. Norman Robinson joins us on the live line. Hey, Norman.
Hey, Dave, how are you?
I'm great. I haven't seen you in a while. Last time I saw you, I think we were on Informed Sources together, so good to talk to you again. Before you were at WDSU, you were a White House correspondent after a stint at WWL-TV. What do you think, as you hear now, that the President of the United States wants to eliminate the process that's been used for so long for picking White House correspondents and handpick who gets to cover him?
It's an egregious affront to the First Amendment. The press is protected under the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America. I find this to be very tyrannical, and it depresses me to no end. It's very unsettling, and I think it's an attack on democracy. I'm a student of history, and I can remember a professor talking about the Sedition Act of 1798, which Congress passed in order to decriminalize anybody speaking disparagingly of the federal government. The Federalists were in power at that time. Congress passed it, and John Adams, President John Adams signed it. And, you know, that is an infamous act that is considered one of the most egregious breaches of the U.S. Constitution in the United States history. And I'm sort of just really unsettled by this whole attack from the Trump administration and its assault upon the press.
Well, the president's made no in any way, shape, or form secret that he does not like the established media, that he calls them the fake news, and he believes he gets unfair coverage from the journalistic community at large. And so his attempt to address that, and he's already in the past refused to take questions from certain networks, certain reporters at White House press conferences and other media events. But this goes a whole step further when he is going to change what has been the historical process for picking the White House press corps. How did you get to be a member of the White House press corps?
Well, I was chosen. And when I joined CBS News in 1989, one of my first assignments was to cover the White House under George H.W. Bush, who was president at the time. The old man was president at the time. And I was the third correspondent. I was behind Leslie Stahl and Wyatt Andrews. So I was low person on the totem pole. So more often than not, I got assigned to the press pool because When you really consider what the press pool does, it traipses around behind the president, and it's actually monitoring everything he does, and if he does anything newsworthy, then it's the task of the reporters in the press pool, AKA the White House correspondents. A press pool to report that back to the other networks and in print media. So you're tethered to, in my case, since I was a broadcast journalist for TV, you're tethered to a microphone sometimes for hours upon hours. I can remember one time in Key West, Florida, when President Bush went bone fishing, I was tethered to a microphone for 9 hours straight. And, of course, nothing happens. More often than not, nothing happens. You're just, we used to call it the death watch, basically. That's what we were doing.
You were there in case somebody tried to or did kill the president so that you could then report it, because most of the travels and things going on were not terribly interesting to the public. We're going to pick up the conversation when we come back after this with Norman Robinson. I'm curious your thoughts, folks. If you want to join the conversation, call me and text me now on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text line at 504-260-1870. Should the president of the United States handpick which networks, which news organizations, which journalists cover the White House and cover the administration and cover the president? Or should it be done like it's been done for many decades, with a correspondents association, a third party, picking who is in that number? We'll continue the conversation after this on WWL as we get you updated on traffic. Someone texts us and says, "You're putting out fake news. What a shame." Even Fox News's White House correspondent has publicly condemned the White House for what she says is them trying to handpick news outlets that will be allowed to participate in the presidential press pool. So when Fox News is condemning Trump, you might want to think twice and reconsider that statement. Norman Robinson, a former White House correspondent, is with us. Norman, how do you see this all ending? Where do you see this going?
I think it's going to end at the Supreme Court, because this is what Thomas Jefferson had to say about freedom of the press, and that is, that it cannot be limited without being lost, and You know, he had a strong belief that free press is essential to maintaining liberty and should not be restricted in any way. And that goes for a president who tries to handpick the people who's going to cover him. This is simply a president who wants to punish people who print and write and broadcast information that he disagrees with. You know, that is just totally anathema to a democracy. This is a man who wants to shape and form the country in his own image and do whatever the hell he wants to do. And he coined the phrase fake news to protect himself from the thousands of untruths that he tells every time he opens his mouth.
Thank you, Norman. We're running out of time, but I appreciate your joining us and your service to the journalistic community. Yesterday, the White House barred AP, Reuters, and other media from the cabinet meeting after previously saying they want to handpick who covers them. Is this dangerous, or do you support him even if you're a Trump voter?